I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, as SEPTA gets the ball rolling on fixing damaged regional rail trains and returning to its regular schedule, we'll hear from General Manager Jeff Knuppel on what the company has learned from the experience. First, a Philadelphia sheriff's deputy is in critical condition with multiple fractures. This after an elevator accident at Philadelphia's Criminal Justice Center. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports.
Judge Pat Dugan, who served in the Army, thought it was a familiar sound when one elevator crashed through the top of the shaft.
Just heard a loud explosion, a loud sound. We thought it was an explosion, an earthquake, didn't know what it was.
A statement released by the city of Philadelphia says when the first elevator went through the ceiling, debris rained down on a second elevator. The sheriff's deputy, who was gravely injured, was in the first elevator. A court employee was removed from the second one and taken to the hospital for evaluation. The city says the elevators passed state inspection on June 16th. The other six elevators in the building have been reinspected after the incident and cleared for use. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
SEPTA regional rail commuters have been dealing with service cutbacks and delays since just before the July 4th weekend. That's when the authority discovered structural problems with its fleet of Silverliner rail cars. Now, more than a month later, we're learning that service will be restored in full, but not before the fall work and school season gets underway. Joining me with an update is SEPTA General Manager Jeff Knuppel. Mr. Knuppel, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Glad to be here.
Mr. Knuppel, the culprit seems to be equalizer beams. Without getting too technical, what's an equalizer beam?
It's basically a component of the suspension system of a car. There's two trucks with two wheels make up each truck, and part of those truck assemblies also have an equalizer beam that gets loaded, and it basically then transfers load to the wheels, to the axles.
And apparently the decision at this point is whether to replace them with beams with or without welds.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I don't think anyone ever had as much information as we have now to design a new equalizer beam. We've done computer modeling, through our consultant, LTK, and the Hyundai Rotem, the makers of the cars. They've been doing computer analysis. We've done metallurgical testing of the beam that failed. And we've also actually instrumented a Silverliner 5 and ran it without customers in it and saw what the actual stresses were in the beam. So they've got all this information. The engineers are meeting tomorrow to basically they have two different designs now for a new equalizer beam, and they're gonna figure out which one to do. But probably either one works. It's what's the better one.
These are relatively new cars, though, I believe just a few years old. And it begs the question, why wasn't this testing done, say, by Hyundai in a preliminary sense?
Well, you know, hindsight is it makes things easier to figure out. I mean, there was computational analysis and investigation of how to make these equalizer beams, make sure they had the adequate life. Maybe there were, from what I can see, and it's still a lot of things to go through, but it looks like maybe there were some issues with the design, and then maybe the manufacturing had altered the design a little bit so that you ended up having multiple issues that created this premature failure.
Thank goodness the problem was detected before it became a real problem. And with that, I suppose the SEPTA inspector who did discover the problem is a hero. Why hasn't he been out there talking to the press or the public?
I've met with him twice. He really is a very modest individual and is not really so excited about all the notoriety. But I've made sure that within SEPTA, he's well known, and this has been a very, very upsetting situation. Certainly for me, I've lost a lot of sleep in July. It was nothing that I've ever wanted to have happen for our customers. We were pushing as hard as we can, but it's one of those tough things, and that's where we have to make sure that we don't repeat the mistake that was made. Now we're giving the schedule that Hyundai Rotem has given us for replacement equalizer beams. We're hoping right around the beginning of October to go back to the regular weekday schedule.
I don't want to get too in the weeds with the expenses associated with leasing cars, loaning cars, and whatever back and forth is going on with the manufacturer. At first glance, though, to what extent should commuters be concerned that a cost might eventually, if not sooner, be passed on to them?
You know, our contract's a good one, the one that we had with Hyundai Rotem. These cars are under warranty. Rotem's already experiencing costs and making contracts to do all the work. We haven't been doing that. The car provider has, in good faith, been standing behind their product and starting right up and doing all the things that they should. As far as leasing costs, you know, and other things, these are the things that we'll work to recover under the contract. There's also other elements under the contract that include a fleet defect clause. So there's various things. This will keep, you know, the lawyers busy in the long run. And we have to see what costs really do accumulate for us. The other thing that I would say is this is at the very beginning of our fiscal year. So we have an entire year to do cost cutting, to look at things, and try to bring the operating budget in on budget.
Mr. Knuppel, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
All right. Enjoyed talking with you.
SEPTA General Manager Jeff Knuppel. You can hear much more of our conversation at newsworks.org. Federal prosecutors in New York today indicted 46 people in what is seen as a crackdown on members of the mob from Florida to Manhattan. WHYY's Bobby Allen reports that convicted Philadelphia gangster Joseph Merlino, known to many as Skinny Joey, was nabbed as part of that sweep.
The indictment describes scenes straight out of Goodfellas or The Godfather. Gangsters allegedly lit a rival casino owner's car on fire, ordered that an associate break the knees of a panhandler, extorted money, operated a loan shark business, and cut deals with doctors to overprescribe meds. Now, Merlino's only named three times for counts related to allegedly running an illegal sports gambling company and healthcare fraud. He's accused of convincing doctors to push so-called compound creams. Merlino's longtime attorney, Ed Jacobs, says the case is thin.
And makes a bunch of claims that a bunch of people violated a bunch of laws, and there's not an awful lot of meat on the bone.
Merlino's twice beat murder charges, but he did serve a decade in prison in Philly for racketeering.
It's not our first rodeo. We've been through this before. We've won more than we've lost.
The feds arrested Merlino at his home near Palm Beach. He moved to Florida in 2011 after being released from prison. Since then, he's served about 4 months for violating his probation. He'd been caught hanging out with another mobster at a Boca Raton cigar bar. He opened an Italian restaurant on the Florida coast in 2015, but the operation closed this summer. Merlino, often pictured with slick back hair and flashy sunglasses, has a court date scheduled on Tuesday in Florida. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
In the wake of the Democratic National Convention, the donkeys are lingering. The DNC host committee commissioned local artists to paint 57 fiberglass donkeys, one for each delegation. Those statues will remain on Philadelphia streets until the end of the month. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that some of the artists say the committee is shortchanging them.
When artists responded to a call last year to paint donkeys for the DNC, they were told they would be paid $1,000 up front to paint two donkeys and more money once the party left town and the donkeys would be sold at auction. The contract they ultimately signed had added language that the delegates would have the option to take those donkeys home with them without paying artists additional money. Originally, the host committee established a cutoff date of July 31st for delegates to claim their boroughs. Spokesperson Anna Adams-Sarthu says that deadline has been extended.
There have been a couple of moving parts. Some organizations are still sorting out, you know, how they're going to get them shipped and all, and how they're going to pay for it and all of that. So our hard and fast deadline is really when we take the donkeys off the street, beginning on August 23rd.
Most of the artists will not see extra cash since only four of the donkeys are unclaimed at this point. One of the sticking points among artists is how the donkeys will be used once the delegates take them home. They could be used for fundraising purposes, against the artist's wishes. Illustrator Hawk Crawl, who painted the New Jersey and New Hampshire mules, says normally his professional contracts stipulate that he, the artist, retains intellectual property rights to the imagery. This DNC contract did not.
They don't really take into account the difference between ownership of the physical pieces, the donkeys, and ownership of the copyright or the usage rights of the imagery, of the intellectual property. The DNC committing is just kind of blanket saying they own everything.
Several artists, including Krall, had issues with the vague language in the contract, but they signed on anyway because they thought it was a really cool project and a very public project. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Still ahead this evening, Norristown is looking to new businesses to boost foot traffic.
We want to see more restaurants. We want to see more boutique-ish type of stores. We want to have type of commerce that will draw people in.
A former firehouse-turned-distillery just might do the trick. We'll learn more when NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY. Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. A shuttered firehouse in Norristown is being reborn as a distillery. Five Saints Distilling is now pouring its own vodka and hopes to bring more foot traffic to Montgomery County's seat. Rob Zawatsky reports.
This is in Celsius, so we're at 77.6 degrees. We have to get it up to 90 degrees. That's a point where that corn really starches really start to break down. Then we're going to let it sit there for a couple hours.
John George is a recently retired pharmaceutical company executive. He felt like it was too late to get in on the craft beer boom, but is hoping to cash in on handmade spirits. On this day, the trained pharmacist is overseeing a batch of triple distilled vodka, the first alcohol being produced by Five Saints Distilling. It's located in the converted Humane Fire Engine Company building, which closed down in 2013 for lack of volunteers. When George was scouting for a location to build his distillery, he admits Norristown was not his first choice.
And we didn't feel that in a lot of other places. They were like, they went out of their way to make us feel wanted.
George credits Jane Moussonier, the planning director for Norristown, with helping Five Saints find its home. She says it's taken some time, but new businesses are finally moving into the area. In 2015, two dozen new businesses were started in Norristown. Moussonier says all but one are still open. This year, the municipality has already welcomed 28 new businesses. Moussonier knows Norristown is competing for consumer dollars with neighboring areas like King of Prussia, Plymouth Meeting, and Conshohocken. She says by offering consumers something unique like Five Saints Distilling, people will have a reason to try Norristown.
We want to see more restaurants. We want to see more boutique-ish type of stores. We want to have type of commerce that will draw people in.
What makes the distillery unique isn't just the location. When George purchased the building, the fire company agreed to donate memorabilia and artifacts from the firehouse's more than 150-year history on the condition the items be displayed for the public. So when the fire trucks pulled out, the Norristown Fire Department left behind pictures, dress uniforms, ceremonial helmets, parade bugles, and a fire pole standing about 20 feet, all to be displayed as museum pieces inside the distillery. Norristown Fire Chief Tom O'Donnell says it was difficult to say goodbye to the Humane Firehouse, but he is happy the building will get put to use.
It's sad to see any volunteer organization that has been in this community for over 150 years to have to close its doors because of lack of membership. But the other important issue is that that closure resulted in an economic opportunity for the community.
Until recently, George had no experience with distilling. He went to Kentucky to enroll at a school billing itself as Moonshine University. So far, the distillery is a very small operation, just a few people. And where did he get the name Five Saints? George says it's to honor five family members who have had the biggest impact on his life. Located on the corner of Main Street and Green Street in Norristown, the distillery has begun pouring its first drinks for the public. For WHYY, I'm Rob Zawatsky.
Music fans will gather at Montage Mountain in Scranton, Pennsylvania next weekend for Peach Festival. Dozens of performers are scheduled to entertain, including Carl Denson. The jazz saxophonist, composer, and vocalist got his start playing in Lenny Kravitz's band more than a quarter century ago. In between stints with several groups, including the Rolling Stones, Carl Denson's Tiny Universe Funk Sextet has been in the studio and on the road for some 15 years. I caught up with Carl at a music festival in Columbia, Maryland last month. In addition to talking about the music scene, Carl offered a simple message for his fans who are trying to make sense of turbulent times.
I had a little shtick, just telling them to relax, because with the choices that we've ended up with for president, it's just kind of scary. And so the bottom line is everybody's just got to relax and, like, love each other and stop all this, like, fear-mongering. And I'm keeping a bunch of weapons so if everything falls apart, I can shoot everybody and keep them away. It's silly. I'm hoping that if everything falls apart, that me and my neighbors, whoever there are going to get together and help each other, as opposed to getting all nutty about who you are and who I am and all that weirdness. And I think as Christians, you know, to be talking about carpet bombing and all this weird stuff that they're talking about, it's just not Jesus. And just because, you know, I'm a former true believer, you know, like I grew up Christian and I did the whole, like, very strict Christian thing and kind of grew to have a different belief system. Still believe that the Bible and Jesus is very important. But I voted for George Bush twice. I was a conservative. And I kind of got disgruntled with their rigid mentality. And I see both sides right now. And I feel like nobody's talking to both sides. You know what, man? I really do believe in our future. And I just, you know, I think once we get all these knuckleheads out of the way, we can have fun.
I know how you get around all this. You're a moving target. How many gigs do you still do at your young age?
It's all cake. You know, I really enjoy my job. There's times where I want to be home and hang out with my kids and, like, you know, not be working, but as far as my actual job, I feel super blessed. I'm lucky. My dad was a gorilla. That's my spirit animal.
Have you passed it on, or your boys and girls?
Yep.
They have the same energy and life zeal.
Yeah.
Ever seen you perform? I'm sure but
many times. They actually think I'm cool now.
Does it work the other way? Know, do they bring music to you that you otherwise wouldn't know about?
All the time. Like right now, I am in a full-on hip-hop catch-up thing right now. That's awesome. The funny thing with music is sometimes you just don't have time to wade through it. So, you know, when I'm riding in the car and my daughter's playing some music and I go, what's that? That's J. Cole. And then you listen to three or four songs, you're like, oh, I like that. And then, you know, then you start listening yourself and then, you know, I'm texting her going, yeah, J. Cole is super cool, you know.
And it influences your sound as it continues to develop.
Exactly. Kids are awesome like that. They kind of outgrow you and then they start hipping you to stuff.
How do you then even unhook from the road long enough to write and compose and run new songs through the band? Where does that time come from?
It's hard to manage, you know, because I'm doing it not only for this band, but for the Grey Boy All-Stars. We're working on a new record right now. I got to have my Tiny Universe record delivered by the end of next week. So I'm going home right into the studio.
How does that creativity work for you?
I'm writing all the time. I write in my sleep, too. So I've got a handful of songs that were written in dreams. Like, if I'm writing a lot, then my whole psyche switches over and I start dreaming more music.
You know, they call this the jam band scene, and many performers go, ugh, you know, they don't want to be put in that box, although it's a pretty broad box. You seem to transcend so many different genres. Is it appreciated by a jam band audience?
I think they get it. And I think, most importantly, I think I get them. Because I feel like it's something that I helped create to a certain extent. We were basically a jazz band playing dance music. And so we kind of moved over into the Fish, Grateful Dead, Widespread Panic mode. And became a part of that. And it used to amaze me, you know, being at a festival and us being there and then String Cheese and Yonder Mountain and Bella Fleck. And I get it. You know, they like improvised music. And I do too. So we're in good company.
And I've heard you say that to some extent a saxophone or flute can be limiting. At least with a guitar, it's more versatile because you could sing.
That's my new goal, is to be able to play a few of my songs on guitar and sit and and sing them and play them. So you'll hear it eventually.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.